Hello and welcome to Sons of the Devil Cheeseburger. I'm Brandon, and I wanted to begin with a little bit of explanatory introduction this week. Obviously, this has been a very tense time in our country. There's been a lot going on that's not funny at all, and that frankly, there's an awful lot that's being said and written about this moment where we are. And Kevin and I really felt the need to get together and to talk, and at the same time, we felt like we didn't really have anything that we would bring to the current events that were going to be important. So we decided we just wanted to have a conversation together, let it go where it goes, and so we just started talking and hit record somewhere along the way, and then we went back afterwards and found a place where we thought it was a good entry point. So this week's episode, if when you start listening, it's going to sound as though you're just falling into the middle of a conversation. You are, but you're also falling in at a good place where it'll make sense from that point forward. So thanks for listening. We hope that you are safe and that you're taking care of yourself physically and mentally and emotionally. And again, thank you for listening. We're really grateful that you bothered to take the time with us. And so here's this week's episode.
Now, the peer pressures are different across the board anyway. You know, you see men in their 30s who are still like teenagers with video games and things like that, and the way they approach interests and such. We've kind of become, you know, adulthood has been redefined. Yeah. You know, adulthood behavior is something completely different than adulthood in terms of physical age or responsibilities. Right. And there are people that have the age and even the responsibilities, but then socially, they've not really progressed deep into adulthood.
Correct. Although, again, yeah, no, and I agree with you. But even then, so think
traditional,
about this.
The traditional idea of what adulthood is.
The traditional idea of adulthood. Like, when we were growing up, like our father making something out of Legos, you'd never imagine that.
No.
Right? On the other hand, he would build little model cars.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's...
And that was... You know, yeah. I mean, I agree with you, but I guess what I'm doing is I'm agreeing with you that I think those things have changed, but also that historically we've had ways of giving cover to that.
Because I bet our father's father or our father's grandfather would not have taken the time to build models.
No.
Or do trains or something like that, you know. So, I mean, I think it's been a gradual, as our society is, you know, as we have fewer things that take us away from leisure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our leisure has, I don't know.
Become a larger part
right,
of our
lives. Right, I don't know if developed, but our idea of what is acceptable leisure has grown. Whether or not it's, you know, and there's...
And as people have more disposable income.
We have no way of knowing if these things are healthy or not. You know, was it healthier when, you know, the way our great-grandfathers dealt with leisure? Or is it going to be healthier the way that people deal with leisure now? It's probably a mixed bag. Right. But, you know, it's just a change. But that change has been facilitated by a large peer group that has all agreed to that.
Yeah.
Or
but it,
a,
so
small,
like,
a small peer, a small non-peer group that has decided they could sell us something.
Yeah,
there and it's created then. Superhero movies are not about the fact that people are buying into all that. It's about somebody decided, oh, this taps into something that people like from when they were from a different time in their life, right. And we can monetize that.
Sure. It's,
I mean, but it's just like how all advertising and all marketing is exploitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's not wrong. And I would say that I lost what I was going to say, so I won't. But yeah, I would agree with that. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I was going to say that what they do then is, you know, it seems like every movie that you get made now is a superhero movie, but, or so many TV shows are superhero TV shows, right? Or space, you know, operas or things like that. And, but what they do is they build all these other genres into them, mm-hmm. right? So they use the superhero as the template to tell a detective story or, you know, a buddy comedy or, a Western or, you know what I mean? Anything like
right.
that.
Right. Like, have you ever watched any of The Expanse?
I did. I started it and then I never got back to
that's
it.
That's a space opera that is really, mm-hmm. it's set in space, but it's, the story could be set in any number of other settings. It's sure. just, you know, you add some different wrinkles and some different ways to explore it by having these ideas of where people exist in time and space.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. Actually, now I'm thinking about this. I want to follow this a little bit that I think what happens is we as consumers of stuff, we get locked onto the setting.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people that like space stories. You have people that like superhero stories. You have people that like Westerns. You have people that write or any of these kind of, you can like pick all these different settings, but then creators can then say, okay, that's fine. If that's the setting people like right now, I can tell my genre story in that
it's
setting.
It's all just storytelling. There's nothing functionally different between The Expanse, Game of Thrones, The Wire.
Right.
You know, did you ever watch The Wire?
I'm in the first season.
That's
right
a great
now.
Show. It doesn't get it. Yeah. The first and first couple seasons are by far the best, but that's pretty typically how it works anyway. But these are all just stories about.
Is that because Stringer Bell jumps the shark in season 3? Like literally, they put a shark out in the middle of that quad mm. in Baltimore, and he rides a motorcycle. He jumps over the
yes,
shark.
Yes, he does. It's pretty incredible.
And throws drugs to everyone as he flies over. I can't wait for that episode.
Okay. There's a couple characters in that show that I really like, and they are not necessarily main characters, but they are they're kind of second tier characters, but mm-hmm. that are by far the most enjoyable as we watch that show.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that more after you watch more of it. But
sounds good.
Essentially, all those are doing are telling stories of human conflict, human struggles, you know, people pursuing desires, people fighting for something. You know, it's they're the same stories. Yeah. You could reset yep. any of those in any other genre, historic setting or fantasy setting, and you could tell the same story.
Yeah.
And I actually would like to see that. I think that would be, you know, people do that with Shakespeare sometimes.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting when people do that with Shakespeare. Yeah. I'd like to see someone remake a TV series or a movie. And maybe this has happened. Maybe somebody could tell us if it has, or you can tell me.
I was trying to think. Yeah. I'm betting it's happened
in a completely
right.
different way.
Yeah.
And I guess
the closest thing that I can think of immediately is Timothy Oliphant. So Timothy Oliphant essentially plays the same character or the same type of character. And then sometimes he's in Deadwood. So he's in the American West in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's in Justified. So he's in modern America in like Appalachia.
I think that's the next series I'm going to watch is Justified.
It's a great series.
I love Timothy Oliphant.
That is. So let's do this. I'll watch The Wire. You watch Justified. We'll talk about both okay. of them. Okay. And then this year in The Mandalorian, there's an episode where it's essentially they go to this planet, but they're essentially going into a small town, and it's a classic Western story where a stranger comes into a small town and helps them deal with their nemesis that's been terrorizing the town, mm-hmm. right? and Timothy Oliphant is the sheriff in the town. I'm like, oh my God.
Well,
so as soon as you see that, you're like, okay, well, we know this is a Western.
He's
okay.
A U.S. Marshal in this year's season of Fargo.
Oh my goodness. See, and that's the thing. So I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if anyone has taken a series and then completely remade it. Although some people have said to me that Fargo is doing
it. Yes. I had not watched any of the previous seasons, but I know that, you know, at least at the start, it hewed more closely to the movie, that period of time. And I think it has generally otherwise, but it's been standalone stories each year. But this year, they take it back. They take it back like 50 years.
Uh-huh.
Which in a way is doing that, but you're still taking it into like a, you know, a you're just changing the period, not necessarily the whole genre. I guess like what was it had been a TV show, I believe, and they made it a movie and Will Smith was in it. It was like some Western sort of thing.
That's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
No, yeah. Which is a remake.
Wild Wild West?
Yes. Which and then this had all kinds of or did the original TV show have all kinds of like robots and everything?
I don't believe so.
But you know, so
well, okay. So here's a show I can think of that maybe is close to that. Have you ever watched the show Archer?
I haven't. I've thought about watching that too.
I think it's really really funny. So I don't want to spoil too much in case you think about watching it. But
is he a spy?
Essentially, he's a
is
spy.
He animated?
Okay, he is animated.
Oh man,
he's animated both in the sense that the character, the visuals are drawn, but also in that he's very emotive. So he's animated in two ways.
Excellent.
It's double animation. It's pretty exciting. Anyway. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you this. I started recording about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, 12 minutes, 40 seconds ago. Now, this is good because it's...
Oh, that's right. You can see that.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
So this is really good to put this right in the middle of the podcast to tell everyone that we're recording.
So everyone, we were talking about some other heavier topics, and we weren't sure how we really wanted to introduce those. And as we were just naturally talking through that, we've started talking about something else, and Brandon decided to capture this moment. And so here we are. Welcome to this week's episode of Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Kevin Woosley with...
And I'm Brandon Woosley.
And we're going to continue.
Oh, you were going to say with. I'm sorry. I stepped on your line.
You didn't. It's fine. So we're going to just continue then talking about... Now, see, hold on. I got to figure out if I got this belch button going here. Did you hear anything?
Three belches and a fart.
All right, well, that's good because I did like seven belches and four farts. So
worked. Okay, cool. You caught most of it out. All right. No. I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear anything at all. Okay. So Archer. Yeah. So again, without giving too much away, it's a spy story, but it really, you know, again, and this is the kind of thing that happens. It's a spy story that is also, as much as anything, a workplace comedy.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
And so... There is a turning point. There is something that happens a little more than halfway through the run of the series that I'm trying to think how to do this without spoiling too much. I'm going to tell you this piece. This is a little bit of a spoiler, but it's not going to ruin how you enjoy things. He ends up in a coma. The main character, Sterling Archer, ends up in a coma. There are then multiple seasons that are in different genre that are not spy stories anymore. Now they become entirely different stories, but it's all the same characters.
Interesting.
And it turns out what you come to find out is this is all happening in his head while he's in the coma. That he's replaying sort of the relational dynamics in his world in these different genres.
Okay.
So it sort of keeps telling same kind. That's where I'm saying it's like, in one sense, it's the same show because it's the same characters. They have the same basic foibles and characteristics and things like that, but you drop the whole set into different environments.
Okay. Now, also, was it Romeo and Juliet But then this came back to Shakespeare, so where they where this has been done. Like
Oh, you mean Bill Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
The was it Baz Luhrmann or whatever his version of that was like a gang movie?
Oh, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that either.
I haven't either, but I believe that is correct.
That was one of those in the 90s where it had a soundtrack populated by lots of, you know, soundtracks in the 90s were a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. They filled them up with songs by bands and, yeah.
Who could make the coolest, most of the moment?
Right. Soundtracks were really just compilation albums that happened to be associated with a movie in many cases, yes.
Because that's going to age well.
Well, in some sense, then you put it on, and it's like, it's just a movie, you know. Yeah. Nobody remembers the movie Spawn, but it had, at the time, was a pretty good soundtrack, you know. So, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine. It works. Who am I to judge?
It's true. It's true. I haven't made a motion picture. That you know of.
I think you should.
That I'm prepared to talk about on this podcast.
All right, cool. Well, that's what we'll do.
We'll save it
for we should set up like a random generator of like various film genres, like, you know, whether it be like fantasy, western, space. All these different things, right? And then pick and have a movie. Then and just, you know, randomize that and have like Citizen Kane reset in as like a medieval drama.
Yes. I like it. I was trying to find really quickly, as you said that you made me think of something else. Somebody has created a name generator for the Cleveland Indians.
Oh.
Because the Cleveland baseball team will no longer be called the Cleveland Indians. Somebody has created a random name generator for that. I can't find it now.
This is...
So it's not paying
folks,
off.
This is what off-the-cuff podcasting looks like.
This is... This is what it looks like when the sausage is getting made, right? I have found the minor league baseball team name generator where you randomly click a button and I get the Louisville Feather Raccoons.
I like
the Davenport Farm Owls. The Huntington Beach Snowbugs with a Z. So, anyway. Oh, the Sunnyvale Wind Terrier. Sunnyvale is a town near me. That's nice. I've never actually seen a wind terrier there, but anyway.
A wind terrier.
Yeah, I also don't know what a wind terrier is. So, I have to retract my earlier statement. I may have seen a wind terrier, and I didn't know it.
As it turns out, it's either every terrier you've ever seen is actually a wind terrier, or every breeze you've ever felt is actually wind terrier breeze.
Oh, I can smell the terrier on the wind.
This wind's got a real bark to it today.
Oh. That's right. Not every wind is a wind terrier, but the barky ones are. Yeah. That's nice. By the way, it's not always a good practice to point people to other podcasts in the middle of your podcast. But I will tell you that this morning I was listening to the season or the year-end wrap-ups of Comedy Bang Bang. Mm. And so Comedy Bang Bang is hosted by Scott Aukerman. They bring in comedians, they do interviews, and they also will then have comedians play characters and do different things. And it, you know, generally gets absurd every time. And so then they let all their fans vote on their favorite episodes of the year. And then every year, Scott Aukerman and Paul F. Tompkins count down the fans' favorite episodes.
this takes forever. So this year, to count down the 16 top episodes is taking 4 podcasts, each of which is an hour and 45 minutes to 2.5 hours.
Are they just replaying the episodes? Because how long is an average episode?
An hour.
And how many episodes are there in a season?
They do it every week. So it's 52.
All right.
Or 50. So, but no, no, it's just that there is so much banter time between Paul F. Tompkins and Scott Aukerman that it just goes on forever. And they just keep like riffing ideas off of each other nonstop. Such that they had me laughing so hard. I was listening while I was walking this morning. At one point, I had to stop walking because I couldn't walk and laugh at the same time.
Well, that's pretty high level of mirth.
Yeah. I was like losing my breath. I had to stop, wheeze, and laugh, and then move on.
Have I mentioned here the time that I was driving through New Mexico? And I was listening to a comedy station on Sirius, and I started laughing so hard I went temporarily blind.
You didn't mention that here, but I've had that experience too. Not that exact.
I was going like
the comedy blindness.
I was going like 85 miles an hour, and suddenly I couldn't see.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
I don't know how I held it together. I just kind of slowed down and just figured I'd pull myself a little bit off the road. Now, had the road been curving at that point, who knows what would have happened, or if there'd been, you know, like sometimes there's little markers on the side of the road or whatever, but
yeah.
It only lasted like 5 or 6 seconds or something like that, but it was. So you've had this happen to you as well?
Oh, yeah. I've had it happen where I was laughing so hard at something that I couldn't see while I was driving.
I mean, like your eyes, you knew your eyes were open and you were taking in nothing. It was blackness.
Yeah.
So what causes that? Is that just like a blood thing and then
I do not know. I mean, I'm assuming it just,
because
maybe it's just you and
here's
me.
Here's how I dealt with
maybe
that.
Maybe no one else
I was really freaked out about it. And I wondered if that meant I was going to, you know, I'd hurt something and I was going to gradually then continue to go blind or whatever. And then I just put it out of my head. So
That's good. I was going to say the cure for that when you have like, I'm going to call it hysterical blindness.
Well, that's, I guess, what it was. Right?
Yeah. I think the cure for that is to think about American politics. And then you stop laughing altogether. Instantly. It's like, you know, like when they say you need a song to get an earworm out of your
right,
head.
Right. Yeah.
If you're just laughing, you're in such a great mood. American politics will end that. Just like Karma Chameleon will end an earworm.
Right. Yeah. There was another similar situation where you need to come up with something to make something else stop that I'm not going to mention because this is a family podcast.
Oh, boy. Is it the old thing about baseball?
Kind of. I think that might
kind
be.
Of. Kind
yeah.
of, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Because we've been thinking about baseball here.
We have been. A lot.
And that's actually why I introduced the topic.
So... So, yes. So, have you read that book yet?
I'm about halfway through it. I brought it up here with me. I'm up to, where am I? No, more than halfway through it. I'm up to the Lee Mazzilli chapter.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
I have. I finished it.
You finished it?
He doesn't talk about Lee Mazzilli apparently having a huge cocaine habit at some point. But,
Well, you know. You can't get everything into a book of 250 pages.
I'm guessing you have a general opinion of the book so far, but you don't necessarily have to give it yet.
I do. I mean, like I think we're going to save like for a whole episode, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Then I won't. But we'll probably be able to do that in the next week or two because I'm just about there.
Good. And then you also will have, once I go to the post office, you will have, we have another baseball-related surprise. We'll probably try and space, well, we could probably work those two into the same episode, I bet.
Oh, nice. Nice. I like that.
Because there might be people out there that don't enjoy our baseball episodes as much as
there are not.
Our rambling episodes.
No. I did some, I actually had some survey work done. And everybody enjoys their baseball.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They actually brought in like crowds of people. I had this, an agency that does like market research, and they went to Macau and they brought in a bunch of people and they played our baseball episodes and the people all loved it.
I just read an article, speaking about baseball and other countries, that's, by some quirk of technology and time, the Cubs are far and away the most popular team in Belize.
I saw that too. Where did I see that? Yes.
And how
that is
even
very
Gary funny. Matthews went down there in 1985, and then I got, there was a link to the Belize Tourism Bureau. Somebody made this year. Uh-huh. A version of Go Cubs Go that was, you know, in whatever the regional musical style is, and urging David Ross to come to Belize. So
that's amazing. Oh, it helps. I just wanted to look up. I was like, well, what is the language of Belize? It's English.
That does help. I figured it was because based on the names they were mentioning, they were all very anglicized names, and so I figured
Jack.
Yeah, I mean it was, yeah, things like that.
Winchester.
That is a very American. Glock, which is not American, but you know. It's...
Well, I think that was English. Winchester sounds very English, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yes.
Indeed.
Well, now I switched into Teddy Roosevelt. That was confusing. He's not. They also speak Yucatec,
which I'm assuming is
which
the
I
native
think
language. The
it's one of the native languages.
Right.
The native languages, and I'm sure that I'm butchering these names, because the Mayans live in many. There's a Mayan population in Belize, and many of them speak Yucatec, Mopan, and Kekchi.
Okay.
I think they could also open a computer store and call it Yucatec.
You're right. You know what?
That is the most popular consumer electronics store in Belize is Yucatec.
I don't approve.
No?
No, no. I mean it.
Am I mistaken? All right. Well, we'll agree to disagree.
Now I've lost. Even I've lost what the transgression was, the digression was before. Well, these have all been transgressions. Clearly this whole episode is a transgression. I lost what the digression was. To me talking about Belize that we digressed from, that we had then digressed from something else.
Well, we were talking, because I was talking about how I had them do all our market research in Macau.
Right.
Yeah. And I got to say, if you had said to me, I was just reading an article about market research in Macau, I was going to be really surprised. But you didn't.
I should have said that. Now on, that's what I'm going to say.
That's it. That's going to be the title of this episode. Market research in Macau.
Well, are you true? No, see, maybe it needs to be something related to Belize, because maybe then it'll be a keyword.
Belize.
English language speaking people, as we are also ostensibly English language speaking people here.
Yeah.
Doing this thing we're doing. That maybe.
Ostensibly.
Then maybe, you know, then they. Because Macau, I'm sure many people there are multilingual and such, but it's not necessarily as big a built-in audience, right? Like, people from Macau aren't going to see Macau listed, like, as a keyword and then listen to our English language podcast.
Yeah, it's true. The official languages of Macau are Chinese and Portuguese.
Right. Portuguese.
My understanding is that, yeah, that our podcast translates into Portuguese very poorly.
But
all the idioms are
But if you've got a keyword of Belize, somebody in Belize might be like, rarely do people talk about our fine country.
It's true.
Maybe I'll listen to this. And just like the Cubs inexplicably becoming popular in Belize, perhaps we will become incredibly popular in Belize.
You know what? I think we are at least as inexplicable as the Cubs.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be hard for us to become more popular than the Cubs now, because
it's that true. Organization. And then, as soon as we are, I'm trading you. I'm trading you for four teenagers.
Oh, that was just... How did we trade maybe the best backup catcher in baseball and maybe the best pitcher in baseball for four teenagers?
So here's the only argument that I can make. Well, this is the only argument I can make. Like, I try to think about, how do you make sense out of this? For people that are not as passionate about this as us, the Cubs just traded earlier in this offseason Yu Darvish, who almost won the Cy Young Award this year, and his personal catcher, Victor Caratini, who's just cool. They traded him to the Padres, and they got back, I got to be fair, three teenagers and a 20-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And a major league pitcher named Kyle Davies.
Zach Davies.
Yeah, Zach. I thought they got traded for Kyle Davies and then flipped him for Zach Davies.
Is there a Kyle Davies?
I think there is.
Do you have trouble remembering the name Zach? Is that what the problem is?
I do. It is. I've never known anyone named Zach, and so that's confusing for me. There is a major league pitcher named Kyle Davies.
Okay, well, there you go.
Well, he's not a current major leaguer because he played for the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders this year. But there was a major league pitcher named Kyle Davies as recently as 2015.
I guess we should be glad they didn't trade for him.
Yeah.
So you were going to offer some explanation.
So here's the logic. Okay, as best I can make it, Yu Darvish had a great year, 60 game season, and he had a great half year the year before, right?
Yeah, a little bit more than half a year. It was probably three quarters of the year. Yeah.
But for basically a year and a half, year and a quarter before that, Cub fans were deeply lamenting that Yu Darvish was not worth what they had signed him for. That he was a mess. And then he flipped a switch and was really great. Okay. They owe him, if they had kept him, they owe him something like $22 million a year for the next 3 years, which shouldn't be a problem for a team that I think spent $1 billion on a hotel. And by the way, that hotel plays no defense. So,
and I will also tell you that hotel was apparently designed by a random architect generator.
It's not real good looking.
No, it's not.
Is what you're saying?
No. We'll have to talk about architecture.
Does it have all the panache of a Wyndham?
It does.
Sweet. Okay. So here's my thought. Yu Darvish is 32. He's had arm trouble. And he's been good about half the time that we had him so far. He is at peak value right now.
Right.
Okay. So if you're going to trade somebody, you trade him at peak value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But even saying he's at peak value right now, that there's still limits to his value because he's 32, he's got a history of arm trouble, and he's owed $65 million. So even though he's at the peak of value, he still represents a real risk for somebody. Okay. And so he's not a lottery ticket, but he's not a sure thing either. Like, if you looked at the three years he was with the Cubs, was he worth what they paid him? Maybe not, right?
Right, but I...
Because he was so bad for half of that time.
Fair enough.
So it's fair to say that he may not be worth what he's owed for the next 3 years. So flipping him, and again, I love Vic Caratini, but unfortunately a backup catcher is a backup catcher. And while I think he's very cool and he's really good, he's still basically a backup catcher. Like, for instance, there's nobody saying, oh, he's going to take over the catching job in San Diego.
No, there are people that are saying that there are probably teams he could start for.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, yeah.
So what they get back is, first of all, they get back Zach Davies, who is a starting pitcher who has had success.
Yeah, his last couple of years have been really nice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, realistically, Zach Davies has only had one bad year.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a starting pitcher for 5 years. He's had one bad year out of those 5 years.
No, I mean, I think getting Zach Davies back was really a good return, because he's not going to be – odds are Yu Darvish, if you look at them, based on Yu Darvish's most recent performance, Yu Darvish will be better than Zach Davies. But Zach Davies will be better than a lot of what the Cubs could have acquired in some other fashion.
Right. And if you look at like, so I'm gonna use WAR here. If you look at the three, Zach Davies has had four full seasons. I'm not gonna count this last year because it was such a small season. In four seasons, he produced 2.1 WAR, 3 WAR, 2.6 WAR. In his bad year, he was negative 0.2 WAR. Okay. So there's a really reasonable chance that he's going to produce 2-3 WAR.
Yeah, he's like a number three starter.
Mm-hmm. But there's also a really reasonable chance that Yu Darvish will regress and produce 2-3 WAR.
Yeah, I don't think that he – my if I had to bet, staying on the Cubs, Yu Darvish would have been a clear number one starter on the team. He would have been a number one quality starter. Yes, he could regress. Yes, something could happen. But I felt like he was comfortable here. You know, he kind of worked some of those things out. And his, like, Jake Arrieta figured some stuff out, and he regressed because he started losing his physical
stuff.
Skills. Yes.
Yeah.
Yu Darvish is still, his physical skills are at peak right now.
Sure.
I mean, his fastball velocity this year was, I think, the fastest of his career on average. Right. You know, I mean, he's got his tools available to him. It's not like he's starting to lose velocity on his fastball or lose spin rate or lose things like that. You know, he's still got the things that you would expect would then allow him to continue his performance.
Right. So I mean, I think it's fair to say that it's likely that over the next 3 years, Yu Darvish is a better pitcher than Zach Davies. I think there's a possibility that over the course of 3 years that they're close to equal, though. I'm not even saying it's a likelihood, but it's possible. And I think it's likely that if you give Zach Davies 3 years, you're going to get 1 or 2 years where he's a completely solid middle of the rotation pitcher.
Well, and the reality is, because the Zach Davies part of the deal is the easiest to stomach on the surface. Because also, financially, you look at it, with the amount of money you're saving, even if Zach Davies is a bit of a performance drop from Yu Darvish, you can add another Zach Davies quality pitcher at within the same price you were paying for just one pitcher. And I'd
exactly.
And if you have, when you need pitchers, sure, having a Cy Young quality pitcher at the top is great. Mm-hmm. But if you can have instead two number three quality starters, and maybe even enough for somebody in the bullpen or somebody else, some other position somewhere, fill another need. That can be at least worth as much to you as having the number one starter.
Right.
So it makes sense. That clearly saves the deal, getting Zach Davis. Sure. If they had not gotten a major league ready pitcher in return, that would have been a real problem, right?
Right. No, that's true. Yeah. At a major league pitcher, not even just a major league ready pitcher, but someone who's proven at the major league level and is still in his prime.
Right.
So that's the plus side. As for the four prospects, here's the best thing I can say. If you look at the Padres, top 30 prospect list, and then you look at the Cubs' top 30 prospect list, we didn't get anybody at the top of the Padres prospect list, but we got, I think the four guys they got were all ranked consensus between 10 and 16 or 17 on the Padres list. So they took a big chunk of the middle of the Padres prospect
list. And they're all guys that could break out. They're still at an age where they could break out, and there's thought that these guys have top prospect potential.
Right. And I think three of them have never played in America yet.
Right. One,
they're so
right.
Young.
And the one guy that's played, he played rookie ball, Arizona right. League. Say Mesa because that was the Cubs, but and he played quite well.
Yeah.
So,
but then if you look at the Cubs, so hold that for a second. You got four guys who look like they've got real potential, and they were in the middle of a really strong prospect group in San Diego. Come to the Cubs. Cubs prospects are not as strong. And if you look at that age range, the Cubs have very little.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you, all of those guys, if they project, if they progress nicely, they could start to make an impact in 2024, 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you look at the Cubs prospect list and you see when do they estimate guys will arrive, that's a real dry period.
Right.
So one argument is that what the Cubs did was they seeded a generation of their prospect pipeline that they had very little from. They did it with mostly guys who were international prospects who they had not been able to sign. And so you could argue what they've done is they've really helped to build their prospect pipeline out. And at that point, it's a bet on your development team, right?
Right. Now, and if one of these guys hits, if he physically hits, if one of these guys pans out, and I don't mean gold mining, I'm going to just qualify every cliche I use, right? If one of these guys becomes a real quality major league player, the trade was a success because you will get more than 3 years of that guy's service, and you'll get that at a cheaper price. From a financial standpoint, it pans out.
Right.
Also, I don't know that even with Yu Darvish, that the Cubs were going to compete favorably against the Padres, the Dodgers, the Mets, whoever else this year.
I think you could actually make... Oh, go ahead.
So in that sense, I mean, what was... If your team is going to be mediocre now or less than mediocre, this is a time to do it when other teams... There's a couple other teams that are at a really high peak.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah, I think so. Well,
to be competitive,
sure.
But you logically, you look at it in the way finances work in baseball now, such big numbers and talent being, I don't want to say it's difficult to come by, but it is, right? Mm-hmm. And where our where the Cubs organization is at this point.
Yeah.
This is probably, you would hope, like 10 years from now, we could theoretically say this was the down period of, for the Cubs of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It, that would make sense. Even if you take like 5 years in the future and 5 years in the past, this could theoretically, these next couple of years, be the low point.
There. And even with that, if you look at it, is because I think you would agree, if we take the National League, stack it top to bottom, those teams at the top, the Padres and the Dodgers in particular, are clearly a step or multiple steps ahead of the Cubs. Oh, yeah. But in the division, if the Cubs do what you said, they got Zach Davies, if they sign another pitcher and therefore essentially turn one Yu Darvish into two starting pitchers, are the Cubs clearly out of contention in the National League Central?
No.
I don't think they are. And so I agree with you that you can't look at them and say they're likely to – there doesn't seem like there's any chance they're the best team in the National League. It still seems like there's a possibility they end up in the playoffs, though. And the playoffs, as we all know, are a crapshoot.
Yeah, as much as the Cubs' offense has made the playoffs real dicey, even in 2016,
mm-hmm.
You do it enough years, and there is a chance that the Cubs' offense will be hot,
mm-hmm.
though even the way it's currently constructed. And losing Kyle Schwarber from that does not really change the equation in a significant way.
Right.
I think if you lose Anthony Rizzo from that or Wilson Contreras from that, you can start to – you see a little bit more where you might say, well, now we don't really even have the offensive pieces to put something big right. enough together. But I don't think that Kyle Schwarber does that. And it's not because Kyle Schwarber has – had no value, but I think you can also plug in the outfield a bat that is within range of Kyle yeah. Schwarber, right? You
yeah.
can't plug in another catcher within range of Wilson Contreras very easily. No. Even
well, they keep talking. Right. The name that's come up a bunch is Eddie Rosario, who was a left fielder for the Twins. The Twins cut him loose. And he's, in terms of like contributions to the team, his WAR numbers look pretty similar to Kyle Schwarber's, but he's a really different kind of hitter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to go after him because it hasn't happened yet, but that feels like, you know, you could plug in somebody like that. You don't spend more money. You do change the makeup, like the look and sort of feel of the lineup, though.
Yeah, I mean, what we've realized is that this team has actually missed quite a bit hitters like Ben Zobrist and even like mm-hmm. Dexter Fowler.
Yeah.
And even just those couple of guys helped to balance things out a bit more, that it made how the whole lineup functions, more effective.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess that's coming back around. That's my argument for this trade. I don't love the trade. And if they blow everything up again, like if they decide to move Wilson Contreras
and Chris Bryant,
if they decide to Chris Bryant or Baez, then I think at that point the team becomes non-competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point I would really, as I said to you before, if they're gonna start blowing it up, I want them to blow it all up.
Well, right. If you trade Chris Bryant, trade other people yeah. too.
Yep.
As
I've said to you, make sure Craig Kimbrell's at the top of that list.
If only. I mean, come on. That might be a trade deadline sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
That has the more of that feel.
Yeah, it probably does. But I would say that I think that what the Cubs are trying to do there is restock for the future without dramatically worsening the team right now.
Yeah, because in the end, I would like, as I, oh, I'll talk for my, I'll speak for myself as a Cubs fan. If the Cubs play in 2021 competitive against the division, are able to challenge for the division title,
yeah,
and play baseball that's not embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I want more, but I've dealt with worse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as a fan, if you feel like you can turn on the TV or turn on the radio and listen to your team, watch your team, and they have a solid chance of winning every day,
mm-hmm,
that's what you're looking for. It is clearly more fun if your team is a juggernaut. But
yeah,
you're looking for a team that can play well, a team that you will be enjoyable to watch, even if you have a pretty good sense that they're not going to win the World Series. Because no team should have a good sense that they're going to win the World Series anyway. We've talked about this before. You know, when you've got 30 mm-hmm teams,
yeah,
even if you can probably, you know, skew those odds. You know, clearly the Pirates don't have realistically the same odds of winning as the Dodgers, but
right,
still the odds of the Dodgers winning, it's pretty small statistically, even as, yeah, you know, a team as good as they are.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the argument. But again, I'll be really mad. I guess I'll just say this. I don't think they can trade Wilson Contreras now because they got rid of Vic Caratini.
Yeah.
If you trade Wilson Contreras, you don't have a catcher.
Right.
Now you have to go find a catcher, and whoever you find, you'll spend more money and probably get less value.
Yeah.
Than Wilson Contreras. So it's a dumb trade to
Wilson Contreras made. He was probably, he as a position player was the most valuable trade chip.
Yeah.
Premium position, premium competitor, with, you know, good age, years of control, all that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but now by going the Darvish route, you end up, you have a, you know, how that went, you have a difficult time.
Right. If you trade Chris Bryant, you're trading him at the bottom of his value. So you're probably not going to get what he's really worth. And despite the fact that Cub fans have decided he's not worth anything because he's had injury problems, they're wrong. He's a brilliant hitter who's now had one bad year.
Right. The reason you're trading Chris Bryant at this point, if you're the front office, I'm guessing, isn't because you mm-hmm don't think he can perform for your team. It's because you have right a pretty good sense that he's not going to be on your team after this year because he's going to be right a free agent and someone is going to pay more than you can pay based, again, on the makeup of this Cubs team. We can't right – we have got other guys that we have to pay because we don't have guys to replace them.
Right.
So, you know, if we were getting the waves and waves of talent that were promised, you yes could say, well, Chris Bryant is a generational talent. We can give him the $30 million a year he wants, and we'll replace right Anthony Rizzo or whoever else with somebody from our system.
Yeah.
But
now I would actually argue Anthony Rizzo is the least likely guy to go anywhere.
No, he will probably get extended.
Yeah.
Because even though first base is a pretty stacked position across the league,
uh-huh,
I don't know that it's easy to get another one who will give you what he gives you, both in terms of the tangible benefits and the intangibles.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I think he's worth more to the Cubs than he's probably worth to other teams, right? Yeah. And so if he goes somewhere else, he's getting old enough that he's probably not a major power threat anymore.
Right.
You're going to start to see his decline years, but you also have reason to believe that he's a smart enough hitter that he can sort of moderate that.
Right.
Right. And,
he will still give you excellent defense.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it's likely that he stays, and not for nothing, because again, well, I'll just, you know, he's a really, and I don't mean this again, this is not against him. It's not his fault. He's a genial white guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the Cubs will keep him. Chris Bryant is a genial white guy who's going to get a giant contract probably.
But Chris Bryant isn't even as genial as Anthony Rizzo. Is a pretty unique level of just kind of.
Yes, he is.
I mean, that's like Javi Baez is you make the same case. One, I think Javi Baez is universally loved across the fan base anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Cubs have a significant Latino fan base. Yes. And Javi Baez is probably their Anthony Rizzo.
And Belize.
Yeah. I mean, Javi Baez could be the Latino community's Mr. Cub.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before it's all said and done. I don't necessarily like to make everything about, racial groups, but I think as white people, it's easy for us. We've always had people that represent us, that look like us, that we can relate right. to. Clearly, there's other groups of people that have not had that, and hopefully we're getting more and more into a reality where people do have that representation.
Yeah,
because everyone deserves that. So I mean,
no, I agree with you. You and I were talking about this too. I think Javi Baez is likely to stick around. I think what happens is they extend Rizzo because Rizzo's not going to get like a top dollar contract.
Right.
And they extend Javi Baez. And probably they let Chris Bryant go unless Chris Bryant decides that he wants to take less to stay here.
Now, let's say Chris Bryant, you don't trade him because nobody will give you what you want for him now. Because indications are the Cubs are still not looking to give him away.
Sure. Which they shouldn't.
And even at, like, you get to the trade deadline and no one is willing to give you. Let's say he has another injury year. Or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you try to keep him? So let's say then you've had 2 years in a row, and I think he's had injuries in seasons before that too. Do you say, well, now I guess he really doesn't have the value to us that we thought he had? Is this a bit of a make or break year in that regard in terms of health for Chris Bryant? Well, even health and performance, because even if he's healthy and then doesn't perform this year, then you start to say, well, was the performance drop because not just because of injury issues? Was it?
So you look at the two seasons that he's had injuries, and performance wise, those are his two lowest seasons.
Okay, and I want to make it clear, I'm on the Chris Bryant train.
Sure. So I think there's strong reason to see those as correlated. That his performance and his injuries have gone hand in hand. Now, when he hasn't been injured, like those two seasons, anyone who's talking about him being fragile is missing the fact that in the other four seasons, he's had more than 630 plate appearances.
Right.
So he's not been fragile. He's been very full-time, and he's been all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like every season you look, and they have played him at three or four positions.
This last year was really would have been the difference in that. I don't think he was moving
this,
around.
This last year's it's the outlier, right? Well, even in 18 when he got hurt, he played third, he played left, he played right. This year they just put him in left a little bit, other than third.
Which, by the way, is where I think he may end up.
He might. It might be that you put him in left and you put David Bote at third.
Right. You improve your left field and your third base production is down, but at a cheaper price than what you would pay for a left fielder.
Right.
Right.
So I think if Bryant is injured again, then that would be 3 out of 4 years. And then I think you legitimately have to worry about, do you want to give a big contract to someone who's been hurt 3 of their last 4 years? If his production is down, but he's healthy, then that'd be the first time you've ever seen that from him.
Right, and we know that at some point, players that are injury prone, those injuries can start to affect their performance even then when they're healthy. Sometimes just enough injuries screw up the works enough that, and I'm not expecting his performance to be down. I'm more expecting that it's a greater likelihood that he would have injuries than that his performance would just suffer regardless.
Right. So I think if he's healthy, if you think that his injuries were of the type of nature that they're not a pattern for the future, I genuinely think you make an effort to sign him. Mm-hmm. Now, again, he may have already decided I'm not coming back to the Cubs no matter what because of the issues they had in the, with getting that extra year out of him. But again, he's real, real good when he's healthy. Yeah. He's real good.
I mean,
go
ahead.
No, that's it. I mean, he's the guy you already know. And he's real good. That's not an easy, Cub fans are already acting as though he's just anybody.
Right.
He's not. Look at the number of people that have put up the numbers he's put up since 2015. It's a small list.
Right. I mean, and I feel like if you get then, let's say you don't trade him and you get to free agency and for whatever reason, the market is kind of topping out at 6 years, $25 million a year for Chris Bryant. If you're the Cubs, unless he has a reason to not, he makes it clear he has no interest in signing with you, I feel like you got to be in at that point, right?
I would think so.
If he is healthy this year, plays like what Chris Bryant could be expected to play, like at a Chris Bryant level, then you got to say that's not unreasonable for a player of that caliber at all.
Yeah.
If he gets like to $35 million, 8 years, $35 million or something, maybe you do start to say, well, maybe some other team is going to kind of build around him as a piece there. And that's not what this team can do right now. Financially, that creates a whole different equation. But if it's because at this point as well, $25 million a year in baseball is not the absolute high end.
That's not crazy money. Right.
Right. Right. And the fact is, where Yu Darvish at $22 million or $20 million or whatever a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's affordable for a pitcher of that quality.
Yes. Although it does appear that contracts are going down right now.
Right. But where the market had been going. I mean, what we have in terms of data from the last few years.
Right.
Well, we've turned this into a, I don't know what this episode was.
It's a grab bag. We're starting the new year with a grab bag. So, but this is probably a good time to end.
It is. It is, because I'm otherwise about to swear. No, I don't know.
See, we started out trying to not swear about politics, and now we end trying to not swear about baseball.
No, I don't really have any reason to swear. I was just going to say that, I'm going to start playing blue.
Yeah.
I do resent that I can't use my great political joke that I came up with. But.
Oof. Well, let's end this and you tell it to me off air.
No, you know it.
Oh, that's right.
Right. But I can't use it because I am a man of honor. And it's not necessarily... It's an urban legend at this point. True. So,
yes, your code of honor is samurai like.
It is. I think people often look at me and say, samurai.
How many of the seven samurai is he?
All of them. Yes. Samurai in his belly. Sure. Wow.
The body says booty. Booty. It's harder to say the body says Buddha than you think it is.
Yeah. Buddha call. The body Buddha says, call. Buddha call. Buddha call.
Well.
On that note.
Well, I think we've run aground. All right. And that's where we're always trying to finish. just crashing into the shore.
Right. Grab yourself a hunk of wood and I'll see you on the beach.
Sounds good. Bye.
Bye-bye.